You're listening to Limelight, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Emily Kalishewski.
Welcome to Limelight, a podcast not just about local government, but the people and stories behind it. I'm your host, Emily Kalishewski, and on this episode, we'll be illuminating the Gender Balance Challenge. While women represent over 50% of the state and local government workforce, they quickly drop off to less than 20% at the chief executive level. We'll be talking about why this occurs and why it is important for elected officials or city administrators to address this issue. Studies have shown that inclusive cultures with gender diversity in leadership positions achieve better overall organizational results. Still, women are not proportionately represented in the upper ranks of local government management. So, as long as municipalities are being run day to day, does the lack of women in upper management even matter? In short, yes. The lack of gender diversity in organizations can have a big price tag in lost productivity and financial success. Striving for more diversity can have a huge payoff for your organization. In addition, as communities strive to deal with changing demographics and ensure that the workforce at all levels reflects the communities being served, embracing diversity of all types, including gender, is essential for the future health of our communities. Here with me today is Pam Antle, a Michigan native now serving as the Assistant City Administrator in Santa Barbara, California. She's also the president of the League of Women in Government, an umbrella organization that supports local and statewide organizations that advance women in local government leadership.
All right, so Pam, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you enter the field of local government?
So I was born and raised here in Southeast Michigan and grew up, went to Central Michigan for undergraduate. And then my now husband, then boyfriend, had this crazy idea to move across the country to California. And that's actually where I started my local government career. I worked for a city in Los Angeles County. And then after being in California for about 10 years, we decided to move back home to Michigan and be near family and friends, and lived here for 13 years. And I worked for both the cities of Novi and for Ann Arbor as the assistant, and then got the recruiting call in 2009 to go back to California and become the ACM in the city of Palo Alto up in the Bay Area. And so we moved back to California, this time with kids in tow. And then most recently, I left the Bay Area and went to become the assistant city administrator in Santa Barbara. And that's where I am today.
Awesome. So you obviously have a long history of being in local government, but what actually got you interested in local government? Why did you enter this field?
You know, it's really interesting. My first full-time position out of college, before I got into city government, I worked for State Senator John Engler. And he was the state senator for Mount Pleasant. And of course, I went to school at Central, so knew the campaign and the election, et cetera. And afterwards, they asked if I would do constituent relations, which is kind of like the basic entry-level job in state government. So I started working there, and to be honest with you, I didn't really care for it, and not necessarily because it was state government, but it was just a little too disconnected from work of government and actually being able to see the outcome. And one of our coworkers was going back to school for her master's in public administration because she wanted to be a city manager. And honestly, I had no idea what that was. I said, what's a city manager? And she explained it to me. Mm-hmm. So shortly thereafter, when we moved to California, I thought, I really need to check out this city manager gig and see if this is something that might be better suited for me. So my first job was in city government as a recycling coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with local government and have been in local government for most of the past 25 years. I did take a little bit of a break, and I worked in consulting with local government. So I never really, I've always just been in the world, never really left the family of local government people. So
Right. So what is it about local government that drew you in and kept you in local government so long? Because we talk about sometimes how we gain people in local government and we lose them sometimes, too. So what's kept you around for so long? What is it that you're passionate about in the field of local government?
So one of the things that I really like is, again, just to kind of like in comparison to state government, the work that we do in local government when we bring policy issues forward to our city councils or county commissions, they're pretty immediate. You know, a new program is created, and in a very short time, unless it's something like a capital project or what have you that takes many years, you really do see an immediate effect of the work that you're doing. When you give money to libraries and they are increasing the literacy rate in the community, you see that right away. When you are working on after-school recreation programs that are available to kids of all ages and with different abilities, etc., you get to see that. And I really have always enjoyed that. In addition to that, I, throughout my career, I've really found myself to be an organizational person, meaning that I really like the finding the right people for different seats on the bus, if you will, if you use Jim Collins, the writer, if you use a phrase of his. I really like to make sure that people's talents and their passions are utilized in their positions in local government. And that has really been something that I've noticed as I look back on my career as something that's been really the thing that has kept me there. So people often ask me, why aren't you a city manager? I really do enjoy being an assistant. It's kind of interesting. I do this work to help other women become city managers. But I myself really like the operations, the day-to-day operations of a city, which is what I've been doing the last 15 years, 20 years.
So you touched on being passionate about helping women become city managers. What is it that got you started in that? Was it through ICMA? Were you approached? What got you involved in the first place?
So there was a female ICMA president, a gal named Bonnie Severchek. She's the city manager in Lynchburg, Virginia. And I met Bonnie when she was an assistant city manager. And she asked me while she was president to be the chair of this task force on women in the profession. And frankly, I really didn't want to do it. I really wanted to be the committee chairperson of the conference committee or something fun. And she said, no, I really think you need to do this. And so we put together, there was a committee, it was huge, it was like 75 people. And I found a person who I hadn't seen in many, many years, but I went to graduate school, a gal named Tammy Letourneau. She agreed to be my co-chair, and we took this group of 75 people and really started studying why the number of women in the profession was increasing, but the number of chief executives was really kind of crawling along and was about the same since the 1980s. So we did some research and we wrote a paper, which is called the Task Force Report on the Task Force of Professional Women in Local Government. And it really got me hooked to learn more about the dynamics of elected officials hiring or replacing a city manager when that person leaves, and what was happening in this process or what was happening in the development of women that wasn't showing up in the numbers of women that would actually get hired as city managers or county managers. And it just really became a passion. It's a way for me to give back. I'm towards the end of my career now. So it's really a way to blaze the path, I think, kind of clear it out so that women who are a generation or two behind me have more opportunities put forth before them. And that's also kept me very engaged in staying in local government to see if some of the work that we're doing will actually have an impact.
So you also work closely with another organization, the League of Women in Government. How is that different than ICMA, and what is the purpose of that organization?
So we, after the task force report, we gave a list of 45 recommendations to ICMA, to the board, which are local government people who volunteer their time to be on the board. And the recommendations were a number of things. Some things we asked ICMA to do, for example, to collect better data and information on women and men in the profession and how it is that they came to be a city manager. In other words, were they the assistant that was promoted, or did they come from the outside, et cetera, to try to see if we could correlate some data between men and women on that. Other things we, much like we're doing here today, an idea of working with state associations who are more in contact with the people in the state in terms of encouraging women state by state to advance in local government, and also to try to figure out what some of the deterrents, if any, are. And then the third thing was kind of this somebody needs to do it list of stuff, but didn't quite fit into the national organization or a state association. And we decided as a group, there were like 15 of us that said, you know, we should really form a national group similar to the Local Government Hispanic Network or the National Association of Black Public Administrators that really specifically deals with how we can advance women, doing research on gender balance and gender bias, and really have an opportunity to not only just state that there is an issue or problem, but actually help to do the work to try to combat some of the things that we think are preventing women from becoming chief executives of cities and counties.
So let's rewind a bit here. We talk about the mission of the League of Women in Government, and that there was a task force through ICMA to kind of explore women in the profession. What were the findings? What is deterring women from becoming the chief administrative officer in municipalities?
So the biggest deterrent really is that even with training and development in some of the areas that we found to be lacking. So for example, we have a large group of women in the assistant or deputy city manager level. Those women need to have the experience of department heads reporting to them. They need to have the experience of working on strategy, working with elected officials, in addition to some pretty significant finance, not just working on the budget, but finance experience in debt management, tax increment, et cetera. And so we knew that we could work with ICMA to help do some development activities around that. But one of the main things that was missing was that there needed to be some research that needed to be done as well. So when we presented our findings, ICMA picked up a number of the recommendations that were kind of in their wheelhouse of being able to accomplish. And then there were some other ones that they had thought that it might be better for a national organization to pick up and partner with them on different things. In other words, we had already developed these relationships with gender research sociologists across the country, as well as some folks who really wanted to do some specific research on women in local government. A lot of the research, as we said in our presentation earlier today, is geared towards women in the private sector, and we knew that we needed to get more information for women in the public sector. Some of the other recommendations included not only professional development, but also this idea of building confidence in women, in that we need to find ways for women to not only support each other through these different endeavors, but to really boost each other up and lift each other's up, that yes, you can be the city manager of Ann Arbor or of Grand Rapids or what have you, which is great to see that there's like four of the five candidates are women. And we also thought that there was a lot of duplication of efforts out there. So that's why we created the league. Now, in addition to that, there are a number of state association backed, if you will, women's groups. There's the Legacy Project in Illinois. There's a group called Women Leading Government in California, where I'm at. We used to have a Women in Government, WIN, in Michigan, which it sounds like it's become a little bit defunct. So we don't really care what you call yourself, but we want women to have an organization and somewhere that they can go to and find that support that they need through this process. Other recommendations included things like having more female speakers at conferences so that people could see what they could be, as the astronaut Sally Ride used to say. It's really inspiring for people to see some of those female city managers talk about having children while working on the job and having a supportive family life or not, and how they got through that, so that young women can see that, yes, indeed, they can be a wife and a mother or a single mother and still become a city manager someday.
Right. But at the end of the day, though, and this is something you mentioned earlier, it's not just about the female being able to see that. Can you talk a little bit more about how this is important for elected officials to see, mm-hmm. and how this message is not just for women and getting them into the profession, but also in making sure we're educating our elected officials who at the end of the day are really making the hiring decisions?
Absolutely. We can preach all we want to the choir, right? But at the end of the day, it's a elected group of officials. And so the other track of things that we're doing, and ICMA hopefully will be a help as the National League of Cities and U.S. Conference of Mayors and Municipal Leagues, is to do some training with elected officials so that they understand we all have biases, and some of those biases might be prohibiting them consciously or subconsciously from considering women or people of color to be in the position. So just like we talked about young women needing to see examples, sometimes it's hard for our elected officials who have always had the same type of person replace the same type of person for a city manager position to think about doing something different. People way smarter than me do research about this and publish a lot of it. It's not things that, you know, I've come up with myself. There's a lot of research around when we interview people and how we like to hire people just like ourselves or the person who left that we really, really liked. And there's a lot to be said about organizations taking a look at what kind of balance and diversity do we have in our organization? How can we bring more diversity into our organization? Recruiters will tell you that you can do a fantastic job on your interview. You can do a fantastic job in your previous experience. But it's possible that you look like somebody's ex-wife, or that you that they didn't like your voice tone. That's true with men and women, but what our recruiters are telling us in some survey work that we've been doing with them is that it's still very hard for some of our elected officials, particularly those that are in the early baby boom generation or the greatest generation, to view women in those top CAO roles. They wonder because in their day and time, they wonder how it is that this person could do this job while still raising school-age children, or that their husband may have a position as well. And they don't understand that it might be a little bit different than perhaps in the days when they were CAOs, and it was more typical that the wife would stay at home. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of things that we're trying to just bring to the attention of people, because when people are cognizant of trying to keep their biases in check, they do a better job of keeping those in check, and then they're a little bit more open to something different.
Sure. So obviously, Michigan, we have 16% of our CAOs are female. What can our male counterparts do to be allies, to help women, to help them get into these positions?
Well, so the one thing we talked about today is equality is not a zero-sum game. If you and I are both equal and we're both have equality, it doesn't mean that if I get equality that you get less. It's not a zero-sum game. There are opportunities for men to support really high-achieving women in their organization. Typically, that happens for a lot of men. They're willing to be advocates for men because that's maybe the way that they came up through an organization. What we're asking men to do is to also consider being that same type of advocate, giving opportunities to somebody who may not quite be ready, that they'll do that for women the same as they might be doing with men. The fact that we had a nice big group of men that attended today's session really shows that men are really seeing that this is not just a women's issue or just it's a family issue. When women have equality, they see it in successful things in their own family as well. Most of the men that were in attendance today, they all have working wives. So they know that it's really important for them to be supportive of women. I think a few of them even said, I have daughters and that type of thing. So we're seeing a change, a sea change in people, let's say in their 40s and 50s, certainly in their 20s and 30s. But what we need to do is have them be more supportive and open to the dialogue like they were today, which is really hard. It's hard to hear that perhaps a generation that you have nothing to do with is still perhaps biased by some of your female colleagues, even though you might very well be supportive as a man. So I think the fact that they attend and that they continue and they be a part of the conversation is really fantastic, as well as giving those opportunities to women.
We talked a little earlier today about the number of women who are in local government but aren't quite at that CAO position. How can we get more women there? I'm speaking mainly in terms of, you know, the CAOs, current CAOs, giving those opportunities to women. What should women maybe who are department heads be asking for or looking for to help get them ready and prepared for that next step?
Well, one thing that I've really been a proponent of, maybe sometimes even very loudly and too loudly in some people's opinion, is that we need to do right by the generation behind us. The boomers and the Xers need to give women, and frankly, young men, the opportunity to serve in acting roles, to be given an opportunity to lead a significant strategic endeavor with the city, and not just give that to current department heads or just the city manager kind of keeping all of that to themselves. We need to provide opportunities. One of the things that we're seeing throughout the cities across the nation is in places where there's a vacancy, let's say a department head retires, it used to be that the assistant to or a deputy or an assistant city manager might fill in for that department head, even though they're not going to be the long-term solution. We're seeing more and more organizations that are bringing in people that are retired to do that. That essentially eliminates any opportunity for people within the organization to get some of that experience of leading and managing a department, a line department. And so as a corollary of the work that we're doing, we're really trying to encourage managers to stop bringing the retired people back in. There are occasions that you need something very specialized that you need to bring somebody in who's retired. But back in the day when I was in my 20s and 30s, nobody ever brought back retirees. It just was unheard of. People retired and you never saw them again. Now, these days, we need to give those opportunities back to our young people so that when they do get to be deputies and assistant city managers and they're interviewing for their first city or county manager position, they actually have real relevant experience that they can talk about and that they can convey in their interviews.
So one last question. If I am a young woman or really any young woman out there or somebody who might not be in the field or someone who's in the field and is looking to make that next step or who has been really trying to make that next step but maybe has been told no a few times, what advice do you have? What is your last piece of wisdom that you'd like to share to our members and to, you know, even the elected officials who might be listening to this?
Right. So as with young people who are asking or even a mid-career person who's asking to experience something different or is willing to step in on different types of projects or experiences or step in as an interim department head, if you don't ask, you don't get. So the first thing is obviously people need to ask. For those people who ask and are always rebutted in terms of, you know, we can't or we won't or it's not the right time, go get another job. It's if you do not have a supportive organization that's going to allow you to grow and develop yourself by volunteering to do extra work, it's not the right organization. Mm-hmm.
Or women even who have applied for that CAO position that have been turned down.
Yeah. And
times.
I've experienced that myself, you know, mm-hmm. where I've interviewed. And I do think that it is important to go back. I've never met a recruiter who wasn't willing to sit down and say what I may not have done as well with in my interview. I've also talked to recruiters who have said you did fine, they just decided to pick somebody else. I think that you need to be able to convey, particularly if it's your first city manager position, you need to be able to convey that you've had the experience of leading and managing in a way that translates for the elected officials. It is a very, very hard thing to do if you haven't sat in the chair. But I think the more people that look at the numbers and they see this big group of almost 40% of deputy and assistant city managers being women, if you want more diversity in your organization, that group is ready and willing and really wants to take the next step in their career. And I think that people need to keep trying. But again, if somebody is not feeling like they're being given those opportunities, even if they have to go to another city as an assistant, I say make the move.
Great. And diversity brings results. We've seen that in your research. So
it sure does. It all of the research shows that a gender balanced organization or work unit, if you will, always performs and achieves more than a almost exclusively all male or all female team. More than any other type of diversity, gender balance yields the highest results: innovation, creativity, financial success, lower incidence of harassment, litigation, etc. There's a real business case for gender balance in organizations.
Right. Well, thank you so much for making the case for us today, for being here at MME's Winter Institute, and for giving us all of MML's members, some information on why this is important to all of us, not just to women. So thank you so much for being with us, Pam.
Thank you.